Good morning, afternoon, and evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to SASS, the Screen Erin Stage Show, your fun and lovable show where we talk about anything and everything entertainment, including film, television, and theatre. You're with your regular spunks, Hannah Shouter and
Nick Angus. Welcome, everyone. We are at episode 6 of our podcast season, and this is our 4th season of SASS. Cannot believe we're already up to season 4. It has actually flown by, and we are reaching a very special episode to be released next week, so stay tuned for that. But what are we doing for episode 6 today? We are going past, present, and future. And not only just that, we're going past films, present stage, and future TV.
So hold on to your uncle and get some popcorn, because this show is going to be a wild ride.
So starting with past, we're going to look at films that Hannah and I have seen in the past. So films that have been released a couple of years ago, might have been in the 1900s, doesn't matter when they've been. Our thoughts, our opinions, our reviews. This episode is going to be quite snappy because we're just going to go through some pieces of entertainment and give you some ideas of what you can watch this weekend.
But first, we're going to go into our past segment with some films that we've seen this week. Nick, would you like to tell us first?
So on the weekend, I watched The Girl on the Train, a 2016 mystery thriller film, and it was obviously released 3 years ago. It did well at the box office, but it did get a bit of critical analysis. It didn't do very well in the critique's eye. As first, always, I'll do a little bit of a quick synopsis before we get my thoughts. A divorcee becomes entangled in a missing persons investigation that promises to send shockwaves through her life. Now, I know that is quite basic, but really what underpins this film is the idea of suburbia and domestic mystery. Now, I am a huge fanatic of suburban domestic mystery. Gone Girl. We also saw A Simple Favour. I wasn't a huge fan of that film, but I still really enjoyed it. And Big Little Lies. So it's a really intense idea, and it's an intense topic, but I find it so fascinating and intriguing to just kind of delve into suburbia and to delve into a mystery that happens in suburbia.
I love how in the description it's like, this investigation promises to shock you. It's like, for the long run.
Look, so this is a film that I quite enjoyed. As I said before, it didn't get great critical success, but I actually quite enjoyed. It was under 2 hours, and I did find that a little bit problematic in that it didn't, it didn't give enough time to kind of delve into the whole storyline as a whole. It just felt like it wrapped up a little bit quickly. But overall, I really enjoyed the premise and the plot of it. Emily Blunt is the lead character, Rachel, and she really nails this character. And also this film, which is based on Paula Hawkins' novel, it actually focuses on three individual story. So I think for any film to kind of take that on board, it's a challenge in itself to really balance the lives of three people and how they intertwine. Again, I love intertwining stories, you know, New Year's Eve. I know it's not a great film, but you just see how people's lives intertwine. Anyway.
Or maybe a bit of Love Actually.
Love Actually, it's the same sort of idea. So to kind of have those three people that you've really got to focus on and get to a conclusion and to get to this understanding about this mystery, it's already a challenge in itself. So I think kudos to the filmmakers, because look, while there were some flaws with it, to deal with that challenge of kind of, you know, intertwining three people's stories into the one resolution, it's a big challenge in itself. I really enjoy the soundtrack. I really enjoy soundtrack of any kind of suburban mysteries. It's really just kind of chilling, and it puts you on the edge of your seat, and it really, really ups the climactic points of the film. And again, as I've said, the acting performances were phenomenal, in particular Emily Blunt. And yeah, just the whole kind of storyline. It's a really intriguing storyline. So definitely worth a watch, and it's definitely worth a watch to then compare to Gone Girl, to A Simple Favour, and to Big Little Lies if you've seen any of those entertainment pieces. But yeah, look, I can't wait to see what happens now with suburban mystery. I know there's a film coming later this year, The Woman in the Window. We've had The Girl on the Train, now we've got The Woman in the Window.
She's grown up. And she's changed locations.
Amy Adams is actually headlining this role.
Oh, cool.
And it's actually a play on Rear Window, Alfred Hitchcock's Rear Window. And I've actually seen Rear Window as well, and I know that this is going to be really cool about how they play with this and how they turn it into something a little bit more updated, something with the times, and again, along that lines of suburban mystery. So I would definitely give Girl on the Train a watch. That is my pick for the week. But yes, definitely give other suburban mystery films a watch too. Hannah, what's your pick of the week?
Very cool. So the other night, my boyfriend and I watched a film that I really should have watched 2 years ago, but we're watching it now. It's called The Big Short, which came out in 2015. In 2006 to 2007, a group of investors bet against the US mortgage market. In their research, research to discover how flawed and corrupt the market is. Now, of course, we have a stellar cast for this movie. We've got some Steve Carell, Ryan Gosling, Christian Bale, Brad Pitt. You've got some headliners. It is a mamush big cast. Now, I really regret not having watched this sooner because this movie explores the crash of the housing market in the States in 2008 and how 8 million people lost their jobs and 6 million people lost their homes. And this film is very Wolf of Wall Street-ish. Mm. It's got a lot of that kind of crazy, casual vibe, a lot of fourth wall demolishing. It's not even breaking the fourth wall. They just take a sledgehammer and just destroy the fourth wall. They do this really interesting thing where, because here's the thing, this isn't just Wolf of Wall Street where they're screwing people over. This is about, you know, four groups of businessmen who figure out that there is something wrong with America's mortgage housing system. And how all of them in their own way investigate these problems and ultimately bet against it because they are able to foreshadow a collapse, unlike the rest of the corporate world at that time. So it's very confusing. It's a lot of theory. It's a lot of, you know, a lot of business terminology. So there are parts where Ryan Gosling turns to the camera. He's like, "You obviously don't know what any of this means. So here's Selena Gosling, Selena Gomez." Me, I'm about to get a lot of hate for getting that wrong. So here's Selena Gomez explaining what that is. Here's Margot Robbie in a bathtub explaining what that is. And so there are moments where the film calls you stupid, you need it so much because the movie, it doesn't just assume that you know what's going on. They take the time. So it's quite a long movie. It's 2 hours and 10 minutes. But it's because they actually take the time to explain everything to you and really get you to understand how messed up this was. And so the movie finished and I was totally shaken up because of how much you learned about this very real life situation and corruption.
Yes.
Oh my God. It's one of those, it's definitely the movie to watch if you truly didn't understand the impact that this crash had.
I think any film that kind of mixes climax with intensity, but also factual information on a real life event. It's really cool to kind of see that and them all merge together. You know, it's not just factual. It's not just giving you facts and information. It's also getting suspense in there, intensity in there. And that's really
absolutely
cool.
Absolutely. And it was one of those films where they stuffed everything in there. You had character development and this real life story and the multiple storylines and celebrities and big headlines and that's so much.
Yeah.
It was so much in one film, but all for its benefit because it was that kind of film where it was meant to overwhelm you and really leave you kind of like, oh my God. Like that was really intense. I kept having to pause the film to kind of catch up to speed where I was at.
Yeah.
So that's probably the one trap the film could catch you in, which is you're left quite confused for some points of time, but it usually is able to bring you back to kind of catch you all up to date.
Very cool.
I have to commend Steve Carell's performance because he just plays a super angry guy for most of it, but he has really great character development. And bear in mind that these characters are based on real people.
Yes, yes.
Of course, like Mark Baum was a person and so on and so forth. So Steve Carell in particular does a really great job as well. Ryan Gosling is, you know, a bit of a head biter and, you know, you kind of hate him, but you also love him. And the suspense as well, because you know the crash is coming. And something else that really intrigued me was the concept of the mob mentality. It was just quite prominent in this film where you have these four groups of people who seem like absolute nut jobs and they think that the market's going to crash and everything's going to go wrong. And everyone's like, no, the system's fine. Like, I'd keep investing my money. It's totally fine. And knowing that they're about to get completely screwed over. It's awesome.
Yeah.
And you just, and you know, and so it takes probably 80% of the film to actually get to that point.
Yeah, yeah. And so it's that anticipation and that waiting.
Oh, the build up.
The build up.
And so like by the time you actually get to the crash itself, you're thinking so many things. It's not just this, oh my God, it's happened. Because they also do a great job of touching on the morality of the whole thing. You know, there's a part where Brad Pitt's like, don't celebrate betting against the US economy because you're betting against people's jobs and homes. People are going to suffer because of this. And it really just highlights the impact of that event at the time. And again, really left me quite freaked out because Australia's housing market's pretty low as well at the moment, at least this year in particular. So again, it gets you thinking about what's
your current situation
happening
and the situation in your own country and in your own circumstances.
I would argue that it's almost a bit of, it's almost like a very, very niche genre that doesn't even exist, where it's like film journalism.
Yeah.
Where it's exploring a real event in depth through, you know, filmmaking and gets you thinking about it. So that was my big film discovery for this week.
Big discussion on The Big Short.
Ooh, I see what you did there. There wasn't quite a short discussion, unfortunately.
No, so, with our podcast season, we're all about extending the discussion beyond, you know, just kind of the initial questions we raised and the initial points we raised. So it's good to have the big discussion on The Big Short.
Absolutely. So again, if you're keen for a film that really educates you about a very important topic, absolutely go watch it. It's on Netflix. And let's move right along.
So now we're going to the present. And the present
let's
is
let's not get stuck in the past.
No, we're in the present now, and that's what it's called. Oh no, I remember you said the Kung Fu Panda quote.
The great Kung Fu Panda quote.
We love it.
Yesterday is history. Tomorrow is a mystery. And today is a gift, and that's why they call it the present.
And I tell you what, two theatre pieces that we're going to be discussing today are absolute gifts. Now, the first one, this is actually...
I'm sorry, did you say gifts?
Gifts,
it's
yeah.
It's gifts.
No, gifts, like a gift.
Oh, gifts.
Well, we just... sorry if we lost you there, audiences.
I thought you said gifts, as in like, you know, like the memes. Okay, that's all right.
Gift.
Gift.
Relating to the quote. Anyway, we've actually got a sass first today. Everyone hold your horses.
Hold on to your
because
uncle.
A theatre piece I'm going to be bringing up now, we've never spoken about before. We've never spoken about this form of theatre, and it is ballet.
Woo-hoo.
We've never actually spoken about the ballet before. Normally when we look at the theatre, we look at plays or stage musicals. So I'm so excited to be talking about the ballet because it's something that we haven't spoken about before. And it's something that I definitely think would make awesome appearance if we keep talking about it on the show for the episodes and seasons to come. So recently I went to the Arts Centre to see Alice's Adventures in Wonderland. Got tickets last year and this was a 2-week revival of the show. It actually had come out last year, but due to popularity, it revisited Melbourne.
Oh, very cool.
In the Arts Centre. And look, I can see why. This is the sort of production you go to for intense set pieces, beautiful choreography, and just mise-en-scène that blows your mind. I was sitting in there watching this and you almost get this huge, profound effect that sometimes I even got more from stage musicals in these set changes and in this choreography because it's so balanced and it's so intricate. You know, this is dance done to a level in which storytelling can come through.
And you don't think it was too childish being
Alice in Wonderland? No, not at all. No, it really had a positive level of maturity to it. And it took us on an adventure, obviously, through the rabbit hole, through Wonderland. And some bits were different to the film, but I thought that actually worked really nicely to kind of give a bit of freshness to it. Obviously, this is a story. And I actually read on the program, this is the 66th performance of the performance. So the night I went, that was a 66. So it's still relatively fresh, but to kind of have that fresh outtake on the story as well was great. But yeah, the things that stood out to me were definitely just the choreography. When we go to a stage musical, we expect big numbers, but I think we forget that the ballet has such sophisticated and contemporary choreography as well. And there were moments where you would have kind of three things happening at once. You know, there'd be things happening in the back corner, things happening at the front, things happening on the side. And this was sometimes confronting. You're like, oh, where do I look? But it all kind of joined together into one choreographed routine. And that was really phenomenal.
And you don't think that the lack of, you know, dialogue or singing or music affected.
No, it's an interesting thing when you talk to people, you're like, there's no dialogue. They're like, oh, wow, that's really interesting. Like, how do they tell a story? But it shows how storytelling can come through dance and how it can come through visual language, so sign language and body language and facial expressions. So it's really great to have that different form of storytelling. And David McAllister, the artistic director behind it, he was actually involved in the production as well, which was really cool to kind of see, you know, the people behind it involved as well. But yeah, it's definitely something that would love to look for, love to look to more on SAS because it is a first time for SAS.
Absolutely.
And it is great to have first times on SAS. So unfortunately it has finished in Melbourne and it was only a 2-week revival at the Arts Centre. But check out the Australian Ballet because they do bring out some fantastic productions year on year. And yeah, some really, really gems there. So let's look forward to SAS because I think there could be definitely more discussion in this area.
Very nice.
Now, what is your theatre piece for the present, Hannah?
We're here. This is one of those, you know, going to the theatre experiences where it was very last minute, very spontaneous, very exciting. So I went to see Sweeney Todd a couple of weeks ago. And if you don't know the story of Sweeney Todd, you know, the demon barber of Fleet Street, and pretty much about, you know, a barber that murders people and turns them into pies. And that's pretty much all you need to know about this story.
Just pretty general, you know, just like.
Just pretty basic.
Anyone for a pie?
Obviously, the story is much more complicated, but I'm not going to bother delving into it. But so this was a very, very quick season. It was only 6 shows over a weekend, and it came in straight after Muriel's Wedding moved out of Her Majesty's. So Muriel's Wedding hopped out and Sweeney Todd hopped in very quickly, and now they're out again. So this was one of those, you know, kind of in and out sort of seasons. So unfortunately you can't see it now, but you can watch the movie, which has Johnny Depp as Sweeney Todd. So you absolutely want to be going and seeing that, of course. So a friend and I were able to grab tickets at the last minute for the final matinee, and it was a fantastic show. I'm not a very good critic when it comes to musicals because I tend to like anything I see.
Musical.
That's the problem. But the set was fantastic. It didn't change that much, which I might have liked a little bit more of. Like, it had a brilliant set and everything, and they used it well, but I might have liked a little bit.
It's that minimalistic theatre set.
Yeah, there's only so many times a musical can not have that many sets that you're a little bit, okay, I wanted something a bit different.
Yeah.
But Anthony Warlow played Sweeney Todd, and so he was fantastic.
Yes.
As well as his co-stars who starred alongside him. It was a pretty good-sized cast, that very Victorian style with the costumes and the singing as well, very like that operatic style, like kind of Phantom of the Opera. Again, definitely. Great musical, really happy I got to see it. Go watch the movie if you're keen. But now we are going to head on over to Future, and we're focusing on TV series that are now about to come out.
Coming soon. What is yours today, Hannah?
So for mine, if you watched us in season, when did we do foreign film? I think season three. Yeah, so if you go back to season three, we did an episode on foreign film, and I talked about a TV show called Money Heist, and it's a Spanish show about a group of heisters.
Let's just say heisters. I reckon
heisters, yeah, that hold up the Royal Mint of Spain and pretty much what goes down in this massive heist. And season three is coming out sometime in October this year, I think around late October. So if you're keen on the show, get pumped because season three is coming. And if it didn't steal the money in the first season, it'll steal your heart in this season.
Look, we love a bit of a segue and we love a bit of excitement
Absolutely.
For a TV show.
So that's coming out on Netflix. So obviously if you've got a Netflix account, you'll be able to check it out. What about you, Nick?
Aligning with Netflix, we were witness to a new tragicomedy this year, Dead to Me, starring Christina Applegate, James Marsden, had a really phenomenal cast. And it's focusing on the events following the death of Christina Applegate's husband.
Rip.
Now, it goes a little bit deeper and there's a little bit of controversy, there's some scandal, but it was something so fresh and it was something really exciting and enthralling. I was recommended by my sisters to watch it. They're like, you have to watch it. So I finally gave in and I'm very glad I did because it was a very unique storyline because it definitely entwines comedy with tragedy. A dark comedy is what we are resulted with. And dark comedy is something we don't see often these days, but when it's done well, it's done really well. And, you know, sometimes you're laughing at things that you shouldn't be laughing about because it's quite tragic. But with this particular TV series, I think the things that were made funny were done in a context that was appropriate and was done in a context that laughing wasn't inappropriate, if that makes sense. It had a strong plot and it didn't try too much with it. It was quick half an hour episodes for a 10-episode season.
Oh, nice. Okay. It wasn't too intense.
Exactly. And what that allows is for the new season, which has been labelled as confirmed, we can expect that there's going to be more character development and there's more room for character development now because they didn't linger in the episodes looking at these characters in all this detail. By just having short, snappy episodes with a really strong plot, it allows for the second season to kind of explore these characters in much more detail without repeating things that have already been covered. And look, the other fundamental question that we'll come down to is how many seasons will result as this? We've talked about, you know, sometimes there can be too many seasons with a particular TV series.
That's right.
They can, because they can get really excited because there's such audience hype and sometimes it goes too far.
Absolutely. Actually, an example of this is that the final season of Orange is the New Black is also coming out sometime this month. And I believe this is the seventh season. So it's kind of getting to the point where how many seasons can we really stretch to?
It's going to be an interesting point to cover. And obviously we won't know that until we get more confirmation on how many seasons are coming. But for now, for Dead to Me, the dark comedy, we have been confirmed a second season. And I think for those of you out there who love a bit of a laugh, but also just love a strong storyline that doesn't try too much, this is worth a watch. And they, as I said, there is some underlying scandal and there is a lot of suspense. And also the way it's shot is really, really enjoyable. So that is coming soon, season two. But for now, season one is available on Netflix. So Dead to Me and Money Heist, as well as Orange is the New Black. I know we spoke about Orange is the New Black in our episode in season two. So we have referenced that. But look, there is a lot coming in the entertainment industry on a global scale. We've only just looked at TV today, but there is plenty coming out. We're expecting Charlie and the Chocolate Factory to come this year.
That's right.
In the theatre
yes.
space. As well as plenty of new films to be arriving near the end of the year.
So in the meantime, this episode is Dead to Me. And I'm kidding. But that brings us to the end of this SAS quick take episode where we looked at what we've seen, what we did see, and what is coming very soon. So thank you again for tuning in. If you want to listen to any of our other episodes, you can stay on this page, which is omni.com/sass, where you can check out our previous three seasons of live shows, as well as this season of our podcast season. And I mean, you're on the internet, so you may as well check us out on Facebook.
Why not?
We just hit 200 likes on Facebook,
woo!
Which is very, very exciting. So a massive thank you if you already do like us on Facebook. If you haven't yet, facebook.com/sass, please go and give us a little thumbs up. And that's where you'll be able to see photos of us, our promo videos, which are really well made. I wonder who makes those. And of course,
self-plug there.
Exactly. And of course, the links to all of our episodes. But in the meantime, keep up with your screen, air, and stage. In other words, Nick,
stay sassy, and we'll see you all very, very soon. Have a great week.